parts. The one part is irrational. It is this that may be bitten, burned, or hurt. The other part is rational. It is this which holds resolutely to opinions, is courageous, and unconquerable. In the latter is situated man's supreme good. Before this is completely attained, the mind wavers in uncertainty. Only when it is fully achieved is the mind fixed and steady. And so, when one has just begun, or is on one's way to the heights and is cultivating virtue, or even if one is drawing near the perfect good, but has not yet put the finishing touch upon it, one will retrograde at times, and there will be a certain slackening of mental effort. For such a man has not yet traversed the doubtful ground. He is still standing in slippery places. But the happy man, whose virtue is complete, loves himself most of all when his bravery has been submitted to the severest test, and when he not only endures but welcomes that which all other men regard with fear, if it is the price which he must pay for the performance of a duty which honor imposes, and he greatly prefers to have men say of him, "How much more noble," rather than, "How much more lucky." And now I have reached the point to which your patient waiting summons me. You must not think that our human virtue transcends nature. The wise man will tremble, will feel pain, will turn pale, for all these are sensations of the body. Where, then, is the abode of utter distress, of that which is truly an evil? In the other part of us, no doubt, if it is the mind that these trials drag down, forced to a confession of its servitude, and caused to regret its existence. The wise man, indeed, overcomes fortune by his virtue. But many who profess wisdom are sometimes frightened by the most unsubstantial threats. And at this stage it is a mistake on our part to make the same demands upon the wise man and upon the learner. I still exhort myself to do that which I recommend, but my exhortations are not yet followed. And even if this were the case, I should not have these principles so ready for practice, or so well trained, that they would rush to my assistance in every crisis. Just as wool takes up certain colors at once, while there are others which it will not absorb unless it is soaked and steeped in them many times, so other systems of doctrine can be immediately applied by men's minds after once being accepted, but this system of which I speak, unless it has gone deep and has sunk in for a long time and has not merely colored but thoroughly permeated the soul, does not fulfill any of its promises. The matter can be imparted quickly and in very few words. Virtue is the only good. At any rate, there is no good without virtue, and virtue itself is situated in our nobler part, that is, the rational part. And what will this virtue be? A true and never-swerving judgment, for therefrom will spring all mental impulses, and by its agency every external appearance that stirs our impulses will be clarified. It will be in keeping with this judgment to judge all things that have been colored by virtue as goods and as equal goods. Bodily goods are, to be sure, good for the body, but they are not absolutely good. There will indeed be some value in them, but they will possess no genuine merit, for they will differ greatly. Some will be less, others greater. And we are constrained to acknowledge that there are great differences among the very followers of wisdom. One man has already made so much progress that he dares to raise his eyes and look fortune in the face. But not persistently, for his eyes soon drop, dazzled by her overwhelming splendor. Another has made so much progress that he is able to match glances with her. That is, unless he has already reached the summit and is full of confidence. That which is short of perfection must necessarily be unsteady, at one time progressing, at another slipping or growing faint. And it will surely slip back, unless it keeps struggling ahead. For if a man slackens at all in zeal and faithful application, he must retrograde. No one can resume his progress at the point where he left off. Therefore, let us press on and persevere. There remains much more of the road than we have put behind us. But the greater part of progress is the desire to progress. I fully understand what this task is. It is a thing which I desire, and I desire it with all my heart. I see that you also have been aroused and are hastening with great zeal towards infinite beauty. Let us then hasten. Only on these terms will life be a boon to us. Otherwise there is delay, and indeed disgraceful delay, while we busy ourselves with revolting things. Let us see to it that all time belongs to us. This, however, cannot be unless first of all our own selves begin to belong to us. And when will it be our privilege to despise both kinds of fortune? When will it be our privilege, after all the passions have been subdued and brought under our own control, to utter the words, "I have conquered"? Do you ask me whom I have conquered? Neither the Persians, nor the far-off Medes, nor any warlike race that lies beyond the Dahai. Not these, but greed, ambition, and the fear of death that has conquered the conquerors of the world. Farewell. Letter 72. On Business as the Enemy of Philosophy. The subject concerning which you question